To get to Bethlehem each year, we have to walk at least once down by the River Jordan. It is cold outside down here along the banks of the roiling river of life. It is uncomfortable outside down here along the banks of the rushing river of truth. It is dark outside down here along the existential river of soul, of salvation, of all that is sacred, and there is more. The river, especially the Jordan, is a symbol of the edge, the end, the last things, the purpose of life, the end of time. Says Ecclesiastes, all rivers run to the sea, but the sea is not full. Our beloved Antonio Machado, whose verse strangely comes back after years of wandering, says the same. Nuestras vidas son los ríos que van a dar a la mar. For down by the river, we hear John the Baptist. To get to Bethlehem each year, we have to walk down by the River Jordan. Here, lurking and skulking and sliding about in the dark recesses of the heart, here is a voice crying in the wilderness. It is the voice of conscience. The voice of him who crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Down, down, down by the river. John rankles and offends because he challenges us to start over. He is dressed in camel's hair, the rudest of clothes. He eats locusts and wild honey. Here is a voice. Not pretty image, not contrived appearance, not considered attire, but voice. Not face, but voice. John in the dark, cowering along the caves of the riverbed, crying out. His is the voice of conscience, by which we are brought outside of ourselves and made to hear what we may not want to hear. And there is more. His voice reverberates today down by the river, so let's go outside. Let's go down and let's listen to him on our way to Bethlehem. Speaking through our conscience, the Baptist illumines our minds, strengthens our hands, and warms our hearts. His discourse, his teaching, guides us toward today's sacrament and the very sacrament of every one day. That is, before we lay our gifts at the manger altar, we will want the chill challenge of a thoughtful, thinking faith. In the long run, what is not true cannot be good, though it may be news. John the Baptist comes around at least once a year to remind us so. We can be thankful for those laboring at night and during the day in the lonely libraries and cubicles and offices nearby upon this campus, to stretch our understanding that it may embrace our faith, which is seeking that same understanding. Theology matters. Not long ago, many of us had the joy and privilege to listen at a faculty retreat to some of the newest, youngest adventures in thoughtful reflection on faith. Words from the wise, words to the wise. One young biblical scholar reminded us, the Christian Bible has never been stable. Each book and collection has undergone a long process of transmission and reception that continues to this day. The Bible remains a living document, preserving not only a diverse body of texts, but also the priorities of those who have transmitted it. One young psychologist of religion reminded us, we are disposed to misunderstand. We live in a pluriverse, a conversation across the boundaries of different lands. We witness the inevitable but not necessary collapse of ambiguity into certainty. Sometimes, especially when we're trying truly to distinguish cruelty from care, we need a sense of ambiguity. We may need to return again and again to Nicholas of Cusa and the doctrine of learned ignorance. One young historian reminded us of the central role women have played in global missions, saying, Empathy is like oxygen. When you feel somebody experience you deeply, it's like air, like oxygen. One young philosophical theologian reminded us, as we look at religious experience, we have to hold ourselves accountable to empirical research. And at the last, an older, wiser teacher reminded this academic circle of an academic peril. You know, he said, sometimes mistakenly we think that if you can get it down on paper, you don't have to live it through in life. Some of you will have had the benefit of those who showed by example how to think about faith, how faithfully to think. We want to live in our own version of the memory Tony Jute had of Manhattan decades ago. Manhattan in those decades, he wrote, was the crossroads where original minds lingered. We could hear his sentence as ecclesiology. So too the church, a crossroads where original minds linger. This autumn, it may be, our learning has been on the street, not in the library, in the culture, not in the school, in the meaning of what things mean. This, our theme in Advent, our Advent 2016 Fordable River, the meaning of what things mean. When I use a word, said Humpty Dumpty in a rather scornful tone, it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less. The question is, said Alice, whether you can make words mean so many different things. What you say you meant, in all sincerity, by a word, a choice, a sermon, or a vote, is not in any significant measure what your word, choice, sermon, or vote means. Its meaning is in its impact, not in its intention. Its meaning is in its effect, not in its sentiment. It means what it does to others. My sister cried when I said something to her. I was playing. But Mom, I didn't mean to hurt her. I didn't mean it that way. I'm sure you didn't, Bobby. Now you go to your room. No supper. You may not have meant it to hurt, let's be generous, but hurt it did. Words, acts, deeds, votes have their meaning in the future they create, not in some sentiment of the heart. We are responsible, especially the preacher, not for what we say, but for what we are heard to say. What you meant by that vote is not what it means. What it means is what it does. There is no way, that is, in living the Christian gospel to normalize demagoguery, not in its racist dimension, not in its mistreatment of women, not in its denigration of color, difference, globe, disability, or otherness. Demagoguery from any position deserves and must receive nothing but condemnation, contempt, and resistance. There is no way in announcing the gospel of grace or of living it to normalize such, or at least saith John the Baptist. Then, too, your hands are touching and helping others. Our students, for many years, engaged in a citywide crop walk to combat world hunger, as a visit this week of a 2011 graduate, Tyler Sitt, recalled. Our Methodist Fellowship has worked over many years at the Cooper Mission in Roxbury. Our partnership with the university and with Habitat for Humanity once built a full house. That is, as a congregation, you continue to support the needs of others through the Boston Food Pantry and many other missions. In short, hands-on, forms of service continue to thrive here at Marsh Chapel, thanks to the lay leadership offered in these many areas. What we love, we should love ardently. Service helps us ground our faith in action and thereby protects us from betraying the life into which we have been called. Tragedy is to betray the life into which you have been called, or the profession into which you have been called, or the calling into which you have been called. Our current generation of students excels at participatory service ministry and teaches its value by example. So this Advent, for example, our students have said to us, "We invite you to consider collecting items for donation to populations in need, specifically for local food banks, homeless shelters, children's charities, and disaster relief. For those of you in the Boston area, we encourage you to bring your donations to Marsh Chapel at the end of each week, and we will deliver them at each of the following nonprofit organizations: Greater Boston Food Bank, Pine Street Inn, Cradles to Crayons, and the United Methodist Committee on Relief." Head and hands, mind and service, finally rely on the heart. In the winter, we learn to stay warm. Warmth, warmth, warmth. We are dying of cold, not of darkness. It is not the night that kills. It is the frost. So Unamuno. At night, our eyes are sharpened to see shapes in the shadows. When we experience diminishment, we also hold more closely those things which mean most to us. With age comes wisdom. Most of our ministry these years has been in snow, in smaller assignments, little churches. The snow fell often on afternoons given over to sharing the gospel one by one. What a privilege! Would that more and better and sooner would soon heed the invitation to ministry. At the kitchen table, over coffee, in a parking lot, within a small office, at the hospital, at school, with lunch, in a nursing home, in the barn, at dusk, milking time, in the sugar house, on a tractor, or in a pastoral visit of the following sort. Snow swirled that day as the nursing home hove into view. Gladys deserved a call on the line between life and death, and the preacher came prepared, or so he thought. "Would you like to pray with me? Would you like me to pray with you, Gladys?" "Oh, it's not necessary. Of course, I love all the prayers of the church, particularly now that I see little. Those I carry in memory from our old liturgy mean so much. But no, I'm fine." "Well, perhaps you would like to hear the Psalms. My grandmother appreciated them read You mean as she lay dying?" "Yes." "Oh, it's not necessary. I mean, I do love the Psalms and was lucky to have them taught rote to me at church camp so that they rest on my memory like goodness and mercy all the days of my life. But no, I'm fine." "Well, I know that you sang in the choir. Would you like some of the hymns recited for you?" "Oh, that's not necessary. I do so love music. I can sing the hymns from memory to myself at night. I found my faith singing, you know. It just seems so real when we would sing when we were younger, around the piano, around the campfire, around the church. I knew in my heart, I knew whom I could trust. But no, I'm fine. I brought you communion in this old traveling kit. Would you like communion? Oh, that's not necessary. We can have communion if you like. It is so meaningful to me. I can feel my husband right at my side, knee to knee, when I receive. After he died, I could not hear anything that was said in your sermons for so long because my heart hurt so loud. But I still could get grace in those years in communion. But no, I'm fine. So the snow was falling, as it does in ministry in our region, the North. That blanket of snow, blanket of proximate mortality, blanket of grace. Snow on snow, flake on flake. Just like a preacher, he thought, nothing to offer but to stand and wait and wring the hands. Gladys, is there anything that I could bring you today? Well, as a matter of fact, there is. Tell me about our church. I've been out of worship for so long. How is the church doing this Christmas? Are the children coming and being taught to give their money to others? And what of the youth? Are they in church and skating and sledding and hayriding and falling in love? Tell me about the UMW and their mission goal. Did they make it? A dollar means so little to us and so much in Honduras. Tell me about the building. Are the trustees preparing for another generation? It's so easy to defer maintenance. What about the choir? Are they singing from faith to faith? And tell me about your preaching and the superintendent and the general superintendent. What is going to happen to our little church? Tell me, please. Tell me about our church. That is where I have found all my life meaning, depth, love. That's what you can bring to me today. Speaking through our conscience, the Baptist illumines our minds, strengthens our hands, and warms our hearts. His discourse, his teaching guides us toward today's sacrament and the very sacrament of every one day. As Howard Thurman wrote, when the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, then the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, heal the broken, feed the hungry, release the prisoner, rebuild the nations, bring peace among peoples, and make music in the heart. Amen.